This week, what does it take to stamp out gender-based violence in our societies? How hard is it to report cases, to prosecute them, and to punish the perpetrators? And where does the global campaign to end gender-based violence go next? We'll also speak to two prominent lifelong activists about the politics around gender-based violence in some African countries. Straight Talk Africa starts now.
Hello there and welcome to Straight Talk Africa. We're coming to you from VOA's headquarters here in Washington. I'm Heidi Adams. Every year around this time, the world marks the 16 days of activism against gender-based violence. The campaign, led by the United Nations, calls for the prevention and elimination of violence against women and girls. And every year, the statistics remain shocking. According to UN Women, gender-based violence worldwide remains the most widespread and pervasive human rights violation. An estimated 1 in 3 women are affected, and that figure has remained largely unchanged over the last decade. Global estimates also show that on average, more than 5 women or girls are killed every hour by someone in their own family. In Africa, South Africa has long been a hotbed for gender-based violence. The rate of femicide in the Southern African nation is 5 times higher than the global average, according to the UN. President Cyril Ramaphosa called it the country's gender-based violence problem, a second pandemic during the COVID-19 crisis. Well, last year, South Africa's parliament enacted a trio of laws to address the crisis. But have these laws and protections worked? Do women feel safer today in their homes, at work, at university, on the streets, or any public place for that matter? Well, joining me now from Pretoria, South Africa, is Noma Masiko Mpaka. She is a researcher with Human Rights Watch in their Africa division, where she covers South Africa, Eswatini, and Lesotho. Noma, welcome to Straight Talk Africa. Great to have you with us. I want to get right into it. Please tell us, and can you help us understand what exactly gender-based violence encompasses? What are the types of violence we're talking about here?
Thank you so much for having me, and a very good afternoon to your viewers and listeners. So you have a variety of types of GBV or typology of GBV that we're seeing in South Africa, from your physical violence, that's your assault, your trafficking, your honor killings, your femicide, to your sexual violence such as rape, your marital rape, corrective rape of LGBTIQ plus persons, your forced marriages, sexual exploitation, issues of incest, all the way to issues of emotional and psychological abuse, to economic abuse, to issues of even obstetric and medicalized violence. And of course, lastly, because we're living in the digital age, we're also seeing issues of online or cyber violence against women, issues of revenge porn, digital spying, cyber stalking, trolling, all these issues, presenting themselves in the South African context.
I want to stay, of course, with the South African context. We know that that country has a robust civil society who are known for holding government's feet to the fire. And, of course, the government has, in public at least, shown that they're making, trying to make some progress towards addressing the problem, because the protests were very loud out on the streets. It was almost very hard to ignore it. But in tackling gender-based violence, what's your assessment of how well the South African government has really done in tackling the problem, but also in terms of not just enacting laws, but enforcing those laws, in terms of activism you see in society, and then society itself, the customs, the societal norms? What's your assessment?
Yeah, I mean, I think our government, for the first time, I think we're actually talking about the issue. And I think there's a very clear acknowledgement that we have a crisis of violence in the country. And I think if we're talking, if we're having any kind of discussion around violence against women in the country, we really cannot have that conversation without understanding the issue of crime and violence widely within the country, whether we're talking about homicide rates, which are also among the highest in the world, whether we're talking about hijackings, armed robberies, home invasions. So really, GBV is taking place in a context where there's general violence And of course, that goes back historically. And in fact, if we're talking about the fight against apartheid in South Africa, it was one not only against racism, but also sexism and all forms of discrimination. But I think the country and our leaders are at a point where I think we're awake, we're no longer asleep to the crisis and the reality that we're facing. And I think we're beginning to put in place a number of policies, laws, amendment laws, strategies, all the rest of it. But I suppose really the challenge that we're confronting in South Africa, and I suppose that is the paradox that I often talk about, is that we have these good laws, we have the Rolls Royce of constitutions among, you know, one of the best in the world. We have all these laws and policies and frameworks that seek to address, you know, violence against women in the country. Yet the realities on the ground point to a completely different story. And really, I think for us, the big challenge is around closing that gap between what is written on paper and what is actually found on the ground. And really, the issue is really around the implementation. But over and above that, it's also actually, when we're having these laws and policies, ensuring that we have sufficient funding and resourcing and costing of the laws and policies, strategies, frameworks that we have in place. But also, even more important, is that we have monitoring and evaluation mechanisms where we'll be able to hold our government to account. And I think that is probably one of the main missing things that we're seeing in South Africa.
Yeah, you know, it's true when you talk about the realities on the ground. I grew up in a time in South Africa where that wasn't talked about. And I grew up in a house. I'm a child survivor of domestic violence. It followed me throughout my childhood, throughout my adolescent years, until I was able to leave home. But I do remember a very big silence around it, and women not speaking out because they would have to take the blame. My mother would have to take the blame for finding herself in a situation like that. Very quickly, please give us just some insight into what's behind the problem of femicide in South Africa. We were talking about these very high numbers. What are the root causes here? And I know history has a big role to play here.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think, again, I mean, I think the issue is large. The issue is historical. And certainly the issue, the solutions to, you know, a generational, multiple generational-wide issue would not be solved in a short space of time, what, less than, you know, 3 decades. But I think it is, for me, it goes back to kind of, you know, the work that needs to be done in terms of prevention. And this goes back to kind of socialization, right? I think the big challenge with dealing with PBB is not only in the laws or the high-level stuff, but I think it's in the way that we raise our boy children and the way that we raise our girl children. And it's really, it brings it back to the hearts and the minds and issues around consent culture, and actually even conversations around us reimagining what it means to be a man in a country such as South Africa that is so violent, outside of dominance, aggression, violence, control. And I think there are a number of studies. I mean, there's some good scholars such as, I think her name is Dr. Jukes, who's done a number of studies around GBV, who talks about comprehensive social behavior change programs, which I understand they've been doing in a number of kind of vulnerable communities, such as informal settlements, townships, and other areas. But I think what we need to do is really do the grassroots work. We have in South Africa in our curriculum a subject called life orientation. And, you know, more and more women's rights activists have been talking about how we can leverage on that for GBV awareness and adding, you know, modules within the curriculum, of course, that are age appropriate. Around, you know, conversations that young people in primary schools and secondary schools could be having around what constitutes violence. Because I think often we'd know that if you slap a person, that is violence. But even the language that we use, how we refer to each other, to men, to women, to gender non-conforming persons, what does it mean to consent? What does it mean to be a man? What does it mean to be in a relationship? What does it mean to be in a household that is peaceful and healthy and thriving, and not in a home that is violent, that is you know, unstable, etc. And I think there's a lot of work that we need to do in South Africa at the grassroots, and that would require for us to actually dedicate a lot of resources to a lot of these grassroots organizations who are doing this kind of work in communities, to young people as a preventative measure, but also among older people in a way that would try to orient and change their hearts and minds and their thinking around gender roles and gender dynamics broadly.
It's so important what you were saying about how we refer to each other, how we speak to each other. excuse me, I remember seeing a woman speaking out. She is a survivor of domestic violence as part of UN Women's Unsilenced campaign, where she said, you know, the violence starts with a shout and then it becomes a slap. And then it gets worse from there. But Norma, thank you so much for your time. I really do appreciate it. Norma Masiko Mpaka is from Human Rights Watch. She's speaking to me there from Pretoria in South Africa. Well, we're going to take a short break here on Straight Talk Africa. And when we return, we'll look at the politics of violence against women. My amazing guests are standing by. Stay with us. We'll be back in a moment.
In times of change, when the world seems uncertain, and what we hear doesn't reflect what we see, we seek the truth. When we are told only part of the story, we lose trust. In moments of crisis, our dreams, hopes, and wishes for a better tomorrow depend on a free press. At Voice of America, we bring you the stories that people take risks to see. We connect the world and unite it with truth. At Voice of America, we show you the whole picture.
Africa for centuries has produced handmade, traditional and colorful fabric designs with elaborate prints and bold patterns. However, what is thought to be cheap Chinese-made African ethnic clothing is taking over the traditional market, forcing domestic textile industries out of market. On this week's episode of Our Voices, we will discuss the influx of Chinese-made African prints and their impact on local textile industries. Be sure to join the conversation each week right here on Our Voices.
You're watching VOA's Red Carpet. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. Thank you so much for joining us each week right here on Red Carpet. We bring you the latest in...
As of now, I think it's on the high end and it's rising every day. And especially on the young marriages. I've seen people, those people experiencing the GBV saying that I'll stay in the marriage because I'm being provided for, I don't have anything else to do or something like that. Work. I'll tell everybody work so that if the marriage is not working, you can move away, you can walk away and go start your life elsewhere. You don't have to stay with someone, especially if someone is getting physical with you, just let it go.
We have gender-based violence against these domestic workers. I personally am a victim of human trafficking. So I think what should be done in Africa, and we need to come up with a strong judgment which can protect our girls who are working outside. When the right of this domestic worker have been violated, definitely you have to pay the consequences.
Gender-based violence, I have to say, it has drastically reduced because I think people are being empowered. People now understand the essence of living in peace. For now, women are more empowered. They should even empower them more. That will reduce a lot. And then also have sensitization on communities, especially in rural areas. That's where we find more cases of GBV.
Okay, my advice, it's not what the government will do for you. It's what you'll do for yourself. Yeah, it's not about the government, it's about you. Yeah, if the marriage is not working, it's not working.
Well, people on the streets of Kenya, they're telling us what they think about the prevalence of gender-based violence in their country and what should be done about it. You're with Straight Talk Africa. Welcome back. So our focus this week is the annual 16 Days of Activism Against Gender-Based Violence. Its goal is to prevent and eliminate violence against women and girls. But for many women, violence is their reality every day, at home, at work, at school, in public places, in politics, and online. An estimated 736 million women worldwide have been subjected to physical and or sexual partner violence, non-partner sexual violence, or both at least once in their life. That's according to UN Women. And 86% of women and girls are living in countries without strong legal protections or in countries for which data are not readily available. And according to UN Women, no country is within reach of eradicating intimate partner violence. And despite the scale of the problem, cases of gender-based violence are notoriously difficult to track. That's because many of them are not reported. How hard is it to report, to prosecute, and to punish the men who perpetrate these crimes, especially in African countries? We'll ask activists from two African countries. My guests are Ka Walla. She's a Cameroonian politician and social activist. She joins us from Douala in Cameroon. And joining us from New Haven in the U.S. state of Connecticut is Nasu Fofana. She's a Sierra Leonean gender equality and women's rights activist. She's currently a fellow at Yale University. Ladies, a warm welcome to Straight Talk Africa. So we meet again, and it is my great pleasure to have you both on the show. Nasu, I would like to start with you. In 2019, the president of Sierra Leone declared rape and sexual violence a national emergency. He doled out stiff sentences for perpetrators. It's been nearly 5 years now. We're coming up on that February anniversary. What's your assessment of how Sierra Leone has fared in its campaign to address gender-based violence?
Thank you very much, Haley, and welcome again to Voice of America. Sierra Leone, after that pronouncement by the president, has made remarkable progress, especially in the, you know, establishing the legal framework. We now have a dedicated Ministry of Gender and Children's Affairs, which is very, very good because we have tried to campaign for this for ages. So having that ministry has focused the issues of gender-based violence, and it has become a national priority. We believe it's currently a very topical issue, especially when we have a First Lady who has also championed sexual violence with her Hands Off Our Girls campaign. So things are moving. We have a dedicated sexual offenses court with dedicated judges, which has made trying cases a little bit more faster than what we're used to. We have a strategy, a prevention strategy, which includes men. So the conversation around sexual violence is growing. I think every household, every school, it's now in the basic school curriculum. It is something that has really, really grown. The explanation, the reporting, talking to activists. Now it's not just activist issues, it's actually a national problem. So I think the awareness has grown. And for that, I want to commend the government of Sierra Leone. We now have a day in the UN, November 18, which our First Lady introduced to spotlight gender-based violence, especially for children. That resolution was supported by Nigeria, and also co-sponsored by over 110 countries. So we have seen spotlighting gender-based violence since the president made that proclamation. In terms of advocacy, we have made huge progress, and I want to appreciate the government for that.
Kamala, I want to bring you in here. We mentioned that the statistics around women living in countries that do not have strong protections for women when it comes to gender-based violence. Give us some insight into the context in Cameroon.
Fortunately, good day to everybody. Unfortunately, in Cameroon, the statistics are worse than the global averages. So in Cameroon, One out of every two women, according to the Ministry of Health of Cameroon, has been subject to intimate partner physical violence. And unfortunately, despite really excellent work that has been done by feminists, by activists, we have a group of young feminists in Cameroon right now who have done tremendous work, especially over the last year, to draw attention to femicides. And to draw attention to the problem of gender-based violence. So there is a raised awareness, but we have to realize that this problem gets solved systemically. It is a question of, number one, in the education system, women being considered throughout the education system as equal human beings, equal citizens in the society. It is a question of women being able to report to the police, to special centers, and being given due attention. It is courts that are able to prosecute police people who are trained, who are able to do the forensics, and then throughout the system, in other instances, women getting equal opportunity. So raising awareness is great, but it is very, very far from enough to actually change the situation.
Nasu, statistically speaking, men are by and large the perpetrators of gender-based violence, but at the same time, excuse me, there is also this tension around how the conversation is framed, especially when you start naming people. Now, of course, there is violence perpetrated, sexual, physical violence perpetrated against men as well, who also then suffer in silence. But talk to us a little bit about the role of men in perpetrating gender-based violence, how you talk about this on a national scale, and also the role of men in helping to end it.
Well, definitely what we have done in Sierra Leone through the Ministry of Gender is create the strategy which allows men to be part of the solution and also part of the prevention strategies. Men, I have spoken to men, especially when I was serving as special advisor to, the former president of Sierra Leone. I've spoken to men who have told me, they share their stories about how they have been affected, but are ashamed to speak. And I think that particular issue is something that we need to also explore. Because if we have men who have their stories and are ashamed to talk to us or to society, then it is going to be difficult for these men to be our allies. These are men that we can use because they are able to share the pain and understand and explain to other men. It will be very easy. What we've found is it's easier when other men speak to men about gender-based violence. And we have seen them actually bringing in people, talking to youth, especially our youth. They have become very, very pivotal. So training them and allowing them to own this issue, that it's not just a women's issue, but it's a national issue. It's all of our problems, and we should all be part of the solution. I think it's a strategy that works, and it's really, really pivotal to the fight against gender-based violence, especially in the area of rape.
Right. Kawala, this is a conversation we have had before about violence against women in politics. And you, of course, you were the first woman to run for president in Cameroon, and you've had firsthand experience in this regard. Can you tell us how dangerous is it and how dangerous can it get for women in politics?
Yes, of course. I think there's two very important things, especially in our sub-Saharan African context. One is that we, in many of our countries, there is not an overall respect for fundamental human rights for anybody, men, women, children, anybody. And in these contexts, the marginalized group that are women suffer even more. So that is number one. And then, of course, in these contexts, when we're talking about political women, women who sort of dare to put themselves in the forefront as leaders, there is an additional layer of violence that occurs because you've built a society that is a very, because when we say male orientation of power and how to exercise power and very violent power, it does not apply to men as individuals. It applies to your vision of a society and the way you build a society. You know, we live in societies with a lot of oppression against anybody who does not hold power. And in these types of societies, women will suffer more. So I want to draw attention in Cameroon, for example. We have conflict. We have Boko Haram in the extreme north. We have an Anglophone crisis. In the crisis context, there is even more violence against women. So whenever we are in societies where we have built up a notion of power that is oppressive, that is violent, that does not respect fundamental rights, women will suffer even more. And I think this is what we need to address in our societies. It needs to be a very holistic approach that looks at the law, but looks at institutions, looks at culture and education.
Nasu Fofana, we've got about 2 minutes here. What, in your view, should the global movement against violence against women really focus on going forward? What's missing now that needs greater attention going forward?
Collaboration, funding for sexual violence, of all forms of violence against women and girls. It is really, really important that we put our money where our mouth is, not just be passing these resolutions, but there has to be commitment to support governments and activists and survivors. Collaboration is key. But Heidi, I really just want to bring something very important that has happened in Sierra Leone in the last week or so, where we had an attempted coup and prisoners have been set loose. We now have a situation where we have prisoners out there who have been locked up for crimes against women, heinous crimes, including rape, violent rape. They are out there. We don't know. We don't feel safe. And these are the issues. These are the kinds of problems that we face. That is why we need the world to pay attention on sexual violence in particular, or all forms of gender-based violence against women and girls, not just as a talk shop, not just about passing resolutions, but really ensuring that we commit funds. Most ministries, gender ministries all over Africa, do not have the funds to do the work to implement these policies that we are talking about. And today in Sierra Leone, we are scared. Women like us, mm-hmm. who continue to advocate mm-hmm. for locking up these perpetrators, are scared because right. we have these violent rapists out there. So we hope that the world will pay much attention and support, with mm-hmm. funding in particular, where right. you know, these resolutions are passed.
We're going to have to leave it there. But ladies, thank you so much for giving us some insight into what's happening in your countries. I hope to have you back on the show again soon. I really appreciate your time. And that is our show for this week. Thank you so much for joining us on television, radio and online. Do find and follow us on social media. And thank you to the more than 300 affiliate stations carrying the show throughout the African continent on TV, radio and online. And I will see you next time. Until then, it's goodbye.